content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hi there, this is Janice Peary for the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Read to Succeed, a program especially for young children. Today we're going to be reading a whole lot of stories about Thanksgiving, which, as you all know, comes at the end of the month of November. So here we go with the first book. And it is called Cranberry Thanksgiving, and this is written by, the pictures are by, a husband and wife team, Wendy and Harry Devlin. So here we go, Cranberry Thanksgiving. Maggie darted about like a black stalking bird in search of wood for the fireplace. She and her grandmother lived at the edge of a lonely cranberry bog in New England, and the winds were very cold at the edge of the sea. Today, Mr. Whiskers was helping Maggie with her chores, and they soon had armfuls of firewood. "Happy Thanksgiving Day, Mr. Whiskers," Maggie smiled at her friend. This wasn't his real name, of course. It was Uriah Peabody, but Maggie called him Mr. Whiskers ever since she could remember. Maggie was very fond of Mr. Whiskers. Her grandmother was not. "Too many whiskers and not enough soap," she often said to Maggie. "Mr. Whiskers, indeed," said Grandmother, peeking from her kitchen window. She pulled the curtain tight. Whenever Grandmother baked her cranberry bread, she pulled her curtains tight. The reason for this was that her cranberry bread was the most famous for miles around. It was so famous that bakers from all over the countryside had offered great sums of money for this recipe. Although Grandmother scoffed at the whole idea, she still felt it was something wonderful to leave for Maggie. She carefully hid the recipe behind a brick in the fireplace. "Oh, a lot of people would like that recipe," she fumed to herself, "especially Maggie's clam-digging friend, Mr. Whiskers." Strange how he always showed up when she took down that big yellow bowl and all the good things that went into it. "Shh, scat, shoo," she would call out the window every time he came too close to the house. But forget all that today. It was Thanksgiving, her favorite day of the year. The cranberries had been picked, boxed, and sent to the market. The dried corn had been soaked and the corn pudding made. The turkey was roasting in the old iron oven. Turnips, tiny green peas, and a pumpkin pie were ready. The cranberry bread was cooling on the wooden board. The real work was done, and the feast was almost ready. Every year, Grandmother invited a guest for dinner and allowed Maggie to do the same. "Ask someone poor or lonely," she always said. It never mattered to Maggie or to her grandmother that the red carpet was worn and mended or that the silver spoons did not match. Friendship and sharing were important, but everyone knew that. Red-cheeked, Maggie raced into the house. While she changed, Grandmother excitedly told her to whom she had invited. Mr. Horace was his name, and he was staying at the town hotel. "He actually bows," he said, "and he has a gold cane, and he smells of lavender," said Grandmother happily, "and he's all alone." Maggie looked a little uncertain. "My guest doesn't smell of lavender," she began, "and he hasn't had a real Thanksgiving dinner in 20 years. I invited Mr. Whiskers." "Mr. Whiskers?" Grandmother did not appear to believe that she had heard this right. "You mean here, in this house?" But now there was a sound at the door and a loud clanging of the knocker. "Quick, Grandmother, take off your apron." Grandmother opened the door, and there they were, both guests, Mr. Horace, pink-cheeked and all starched, and Mr. Whiskers in his old captain's hat. As they came in, trailing behind them was the smell of lavender and an aura of clams and seaweed. Guess which one of those men had the smell of clams and seaweed all around them. Mr. Whiskers held up his hands to Grandmother. "Clean," he said. "Oh, and where's your tie?" Grandmother asked. He lifted his long whiskers. Right here, here, where it's always been, he growled. And he lifted, his whiskers were so bushy that you could not see where his tie was. Maggie thought she saw a smile from behind the whiskers. "Huh," said Grandmother. And taking Mr. Horace's hand, she led everyone into the dining room. A log fire sputtered, the glasses shone, and certainly no one would notice that the silver spoons didn't match. "Let's sing We Gather Together," said Maggie, trying to warm things up. They all joined in the old hymn, and midway began to sing out with cheer and gusto. Grandmother started to trill like a bird until Mr. Whiskers fixed her with a quizzical gaze and shook out his ears. "How about 16 men on a dead man's chest?" he roared, slapping his knee. That's an old pirate song. 16 men on a dead man's chest, yo-ho-ho, and a bottle of rum. Very, very old song. Only sailors would sing it. Mr. Horace looked very pained. Grandmother peered over her glasses. "Really," she said. Maggie left the table and reappeared with the roast turkey. The corn pudding, peas, cranberry jelly, and turnips soon followed. And then came the pale sweet butter and Grandmother's famous cranberry bread. "Feast of feasts," murmured Mr. Whiskers. "Well, we all have heard about your cranberry bread," chuckled Mr. Horace, "and the recipe hidden in the kitchen fireplace." "It's in the dining room fireplace," said Grandmother. And, looking over at Mr. Whiskers, she added, "And you, sir, will never find it." She really did not trust Mr. Whiskers. Mr. Whiskers stared at the turkey and pretended not to have heard her. Maggie began to get nervous, but she made sure everyone was served some of each dish, and they all began to eat. What a great dinner that was, with everything cooked with crisp edges and tender centers. "How delicious," said Maggie. "How exquisite," said Mr. Horace. "How about some more?" said Mr. Whiskers. At last they finished dinner, and Maggie and Grandmother cleared the table and went into the kitchen. "Watch that Whiskers fellow," Grandmother whispered to Maggie. Maggie opened the kitchen door just a small bit and peeked into the dining room. Her eyes widened. "Grandmother, he's found it!" Crash! Clumpity! There was a sound of wild scuffling, loud shouts, and falling chairs. Two figures pushed to the front door. For a moment they wrestled at the doorway and then seemed to burst into the purple dusk. One chased the other into the cranberry bog. "The nerve of him stealing our recipe," said Grandmother with fire in her eyes. Maggie knew what she meant. "But it wasn't Mr. Whisker," she said. "It was Mr. Horace." "Mr. Horace?" Grandmother looked shocked. "But why?" "Because he owns a bakery in this city." "And Mr. Whiskers knew this?" Grandmother asked. "Yes," said Maggie. "Mr. Whiskers kindly came today to watch Mr. Horace. And to have dinner, of course." Mr. Whiskers came puffing to the door, holding Mr. Horace by the collar. Proudly he held the recipe high in the other hand. "Don't trust a man because he smells of lavender and has a gold cane," he growls. Grandmother stood up very straight and looked hard at Mr. Horace. "You, sir," she said, "are a disgrace." "He's worse than that," said Mr. Whiskers. "He's a recipe robber," said Maggie, and all the starch seemed to leave Mr. Horace. "No pumpkin pie for you, sir," Grandmother said, handing him his cane. Mr. Horace began to sniffle. They left Mr. Horace on the doorway, on the front steps. Grandmother closed the door firmly, and this time she took Mr. Whiskers' arm into the dining room. Maggie thought she could see Mr. Whiskers' smile. They sat by the warm embers of the fire and ate pumpkin pie with whipped cream. "How delicious," said Maggie. "How delightful," said Grandmother. "How about another piece?" said Mr. Whiskers. The wind blew and rattled the shutters, and outside the door came a loud wail from Mr. Horace. "Goodness, is he still there?" said Maggie. "Shall we let him in? It's Thanksgiving," said Grandmother. It's especially Thanksgiving on a cranberry farm, Maggie replied encouragingly. They all looked at Mr. Whiskers. It took great effort on Mr. Whiskers' part, but with true character he stood up and said, Maggie, open the door, and we shall give him the last piece. How about 16 men on a dead man's chest? Grandmother asked Mr. Whiskers, while Maggie went to the door to let Mr. Horace in. And even his whiskers couldn't hide that he was smiling. And that is the end of that book. The next book is The Very First Thanksgiving Day by Rhonda Gowler Green. And this book is about when the Pilgrims first came to America and they established a colony in Virginia. And this is about the very first harvest feast. And for those of you who understand what years mean, the very first harvest feast was in 1621. And so we need to listen to this story because this is very important to our national heritage. Okay, here we go. This is the very first Thanksgiving Day. The food is gathered and blessed. The corn, sweet berries, wild turkey dressed, shared on the very first Thanksgiving Day. And there's everyone gathered around the table, eating what they have grown in the country. And they've shot wild turkeys and gathered berries and things like that. The Pilgrims first came to America and built a colony, which is where they landed, and they put up log walls all around their little town, and they built little tiny wooden houses for their families, and the Indians were the people that came to help them. And here are the Indians, skillful and strong, who knew how to live through the winter so long and ate of the food that was gathered and blessed. So these Pilgrims had been here in America for the first time, and they were going to celebrate their good growing season. These are the Pilgrims who farmed the new land, who steadfastly labored and toiled with their hands and learned from the Indians, skillful and strong. And here an Indian is showing the settlers how to plant corn. What the Indians did was they got some little fish out of this ocean, and they built sort of a hill and put some corn seeds in it, and then they put fish around it to fertilize as the fish grew old and sort of dissipated into the soil. They fertilized the corn growing and helped the corn grow. These are the houses built in straight rows that stood in the hot sun and harsh winter snows, and sheltered the Pilgrims who farmed the new land. And these little houses of theirs, built of, as I told you, logs, and they had straw roofs. And there, here's their little town, and they had their garden, all of this inside a log wall to keep out enemies. They had very big gardens, and they all shared with each other. This is the harbor, marked by a huge stone, where the first steps were taken to chart the unknown, not far from the houses built in straight rows. Here they're walking in, they're leaving from the ship, walking in the snow. It was very, very cold. This is the Mayflower ship in full sail that weathered the rough seas, the wind and the hail, and docked in the harbor marked by the huge stone. This is the ocean that would never end, that sometimes was a foe, in other words, an enemy, and sometimes a friend, that carried the Mayflower ship in full sail. And his picture shows huge wide ocean with nothing that you could see except for a small, it looked like a very small ship, and ships were very, very small in those days, carrying a ship on the sea, but no land in sight anywhere, so that must have been really frightening in those days. And this is the land where it all began, to land where a brave group made ready their plan to travel the ocean. So these here, they're showing the Pilgrims before they even left the country. They left England, and decided to sail to a new country to start a new life there. So this is the land where it all began, the land where a brave group made ready their plan to travel the ocean that would never end, that sometimes was foe and sometimes was friend, that carried the Mayflower ship in full sail, that weathered the rough seas, the wind, and the hail. And those poor settlers on that ship tossed the storm and the winter rough seas. It was really frightening and really a rough trip. And the ship docked in the harbor, marked by a huge stone, where first steps were taken to chart the unknown. Not from the far from the houses built in straight rows that stood in the harsh sun, in the hot sun and harsh winter snows, and sheltered the pilgrims who farmed the new land, who steadfastly labored and toiled by hand, and learned from the Indians, skillful and strong, who know how to live through winters so long. And the Indians ate of the food gathered and blessed, the corn and sweet berries, the wild turkey dressed. And this picture shows the Indians and the pilgrims all joining together to say thank you for the food, thank you for the new colony, and thank you for being safe. Shared, and they all shared on this very first Thanksgiving. And we know the pilgrims would not have been able to survive if the Indians hadn't been there to show them how to gather food and how to plant corn and beans in the new land and how to shoot wild turkeys and where to look for berries and stuff that were safe. Berries that were safe to eat and mushrooms that were safe to eat and everything from the woods and the forest and the land. And that was how the colony of Jamestown began. When you get older, you will start to hear about the colony of Jamestown, the first colony of people from England that came to the America, which we now all call the United States. It was very long ago. It was, let me see how many years ago. It was 500 years ago now, and that was a long time. But since then, we've become a great country. So this was how, one of the ways that it started. Our next Thanksgiving story is called Duck and Hippo Give Thanks, and it is written by Jonathan London. It was almost Thanksgiving, and the leaves were still tumbling from the trees. Hippo was raking his leaves into a huge pile and dreaming of a good old-fashioned Thanksgiving with pumpkin pie and corn and peas and, of course, squash. And what else does he have on the table? Carrots and gravy and stuffing and a pumpkin pie, of course. Poof! A white blur flew through the air and plopped right into the middle of Hippo's pile of leaves. What was it? A head popped up. It was Duck. Duck, Duck, cried Hippo. What are you doing? I'm jumping into a pile of leaves, said Duck. It's fun. Why don't you try it? I'm trying to make the pile of leaves all nice and toughy, said Hippo with a huff. Bonk. Just then an apple fell on Hippo's head. Hippo rubbed his head, polished the apple, and handed it to Duck. For you, he said. Thanks, Hippo, Duck said. Speaking of giving thanks, said Hippo, tomorrow is Thanksgiving. Let's celebrate together. Yes, said Duck, I'll help, and let's invite all our friends. To get ready for the feast, Duck and Hippo went shopping. Duck said, I want to ride in the basket. She grabbed food as they zoomed down the aisles. Faster, squealed Duck. Whee! And then Duck jumped out and Hippo squeezed in, but the shopping cart would not budge. And when Hippo tried to squeeze out, I'm stuck, cried Hippo. No problem, boomed Elephant. He lifted Hippo right out of that basket. Thank you, Elephant, said Duck and Hippo. And Duck invited him for Thanksgiving. Delighted, boomed Elephant. Hippo wanted some crusty bread for their good old-fashioned Thanksgiving. So Duck and Hippo got in line at the bakery, and Turtle was ahead of them. "You go first," said Turtle, "and take your time. Take your time." "Thank you, Turtle," said Duck and Hippo, and Duck invited him for Thanksgiving. "Terrific," said Turtle. By now, Duck and Hippo were so hungry. They went to Pig's Pizza, and they each ate a big slice of Pig's special pizza for the day. "Thank you, Pig," said Duck and Hippo, and Duck invited her for Thanksgiving. "Yummy," cried Pig. "I can't wait." Back at Hippo's house, Hippo said, "Oh, there's so much to do for our good old-fashioned Thanksgiving." So Duck went out and gathered leaves, but she could not help jump in those leaves. "Whee," she cried. Hippo went out and gathered pumpkins. "Quack-a-doodle-doo," said Duck, sitting on a pumpkin. "I laid an egg." Then Duck gathered acorn squashes. "Let me help you, Duck," said Hippo. Lastly, Duck and Hippo gathered apples and headed back inside. Let's see what happens next once I get this page turned. It's very tricky, some of these pages. But they bumped into each other at the door. "Whoops," Hippo bowed and said, "After you, dear Duck." Then together they decorated the table with leaves and squashes and perfect little pumpkins. When they were done, Duck did a dance on the tabletop and sang, "Ta-da!" "See you tomorrow," she said, jumping off. That night, Hippo went to sleep and dreamed of a good old-fashioned Thanksgiving. Before Duck went to bed, she told their friends, "Let's make something special for Hippo." They're in Pig's Pizza again. So there's the elephant and Miss Pig and the turtle. And, of course, Duck. And a friend who we haven't mentioned yet, Frog. They're all eating pizza. The next day, Hippo was very busy. He baked a good old-fashioned apple pie and a good old-fashioned pumpkin pie and some good old-fashioned acorn squash. And his house filled with a good old-fashioned smell. He couldn't wait for his good old-fashioned Thanksgiving to begin. But it was getting late. Hippo looked out the window. The full harvest moon was rising over the trees. Night had come, but where were Hippo's friends? "Here we are," cried Duck, and they all piled into Hippo's house. "Sorry we were late, but we were all finishing up a special surprise for you." "I wonder what it could be," thought Hippo. Hippo's friends each had something to offer. Turtle brought Chinese egg rolls. Elephant bought sea cucumber sushi. Pig brought pizza Napolitano. And Duck brought peanut butter and jelly tacos. That sounds horrible. Not like Thanksgiving food at all. "Surprise," they said. "This is not a good old-fashioned Thanksgiving feast," thought Hippo. He looked angry. But then he looked at the smiling faces of all his dear friends. He spread his arms wide and said, "Welcome, and thank you all for being who you are." "Hooray," everyone shouted. Then they all gathered around the table and held hands. Duck and Hippo gave thanks for their friends, for being together, and for sharing nature's bounty. "Let's eat," cried Pig, and it was a big, happy Thanksgiving feast, the very best Thanksgiving feast ever. And when they were done, Duck said, "Now, let's go outside and jump in the leaves." And there they all are, jumping in the piles of leaves in Hippo's front yard and having the best time ever. So that's the end of that story. Our last book today is How to Catch a Unicorn by Adam Wallace and Andy Elkerton. On this bright and sunny morning, I want something fun to do. So I'm riding on a rainbow and I'm heading to the zoo. This is the unicorn who's riding the rainbow. The kids think they have spotted me. I thought I'd blend in here. I cannot let them catch me or my magic will disappear. Uh-oh. Is that a unicorn, the kids say? I think they can fly. I believe they fart glitter, said one little boy. I hear they can shrink. Let's catch it, said another little boy. Luckily, my animal friends from the zebra to the ape are all on board to help me. They will make sure I escape from all those kids trying to catch me. First, I see my stripy cousins, but then I have to fly. As much as I like lemonade, I have to say goodbye. Those are the zebras, and they're the kids selling. And there are the kids selling what they call unicorn lemonade to try to catch the unicorn still. I dodge that plastic parachute being launched from down below. The parachute is going to shoot over the... They think it's going to be a good way to fly up in the sky, this parachute thing, and gather up the unicorn underneath the big umbrella of the unicorn. I dodge that plastic parachute being launched from down below. I do a spin and leave a trail of glitter as I go. I chill with all my penguin pals, but these traps are everywhere. The kids are still trying to trap him. I'll head to the nocturnal house. I hope it's safe in there. And there the kids are still trying to catch that unicorn with big nets. But the penguins are splashing all the kids around their pool with water as they stand there with those nets trying to catch that flying unicorn. Wow, this room is super dark. I'm glad I'm a unicorn. Who knows what I might walk into without my magic horn. And there are these little nocturnal, means nighttime animals, and there are the bats hanging upside down in their trees, and little nighttime squirrels and animals in the trees. And there are the kids still trying to catch the unicorn with a big bowl of ice cream. Now I'm off to see more friends. It's time to shrink my size, but sure is hard in here with all these butterflies. Kids can't catch them yet. Unicorns eat for free, they say. My nose smells something super sweet coming from the cafe. Oh, yum. I'll snag a little bite before I fly away. Next up, I go where it's hot and where there's lots of scales. The snakes and lizards help me, though, with the use of their clever tails. They scare everybody away by being snakes and scaring. I'm big again, and with more friends, these monkeys make me laugh. But I would have been caught easily if not for the giraffe. And then it is time for that unicorn to escape. He flies away into the sky. I've run out of time for today's episode of Read to Succeed. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Janice Peary I'm Janice Peary, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For more information about NCRS, visit our website at ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to Read to Succeed on the North Carolina Reading Service.